Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Mayor, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of September. December? You have 75 shopping days.
No, you're only four.
Yeah, the 21st day of December on Domini 2024, and you, you possibly lucky people are listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. Your password is at risk from hackers. Yes, that's news. Microsoft has warned that attacks on passwords has doubled since last year, and that it now blocks 7,000 attacks on passwords per second. That's why it has now confirmed your password will be deleted. It's just a matter of time, but you should act now before it's too late. To quote Microsoft, the password era is ending. Bad actors know it, which is why they're desperately accelerating password-related attacks while they still can. But what are we replacing them with? Pass keys, of course, which Microsoft says not only offer an improved user experience by letting you sign in faster with your face, fingerprint, or PIN, but they also aren't susceptible to the same kind of attacks as passwords. So, what exactly is a pass key? Put simply, it's a hardware authentication key without the need to carry around a hardware authentication key. Instead, it uses the security of a device like your phone or a fingerprint reader on your laptop to authenticate that it's really you logging into an app or service.
Which is a much bigger hardware authentication key than the little dongles.
Right. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, that means biometrics and expanding the trusted device ecosystem being driven by Apple and Google to move away from passwords. So basically, it's one of those things, the accelerator app, excuse me, authenticator app on your phone. When you go to log into somewhere, it's going to say go to your authenticator app and either, you know, type in the numbers or hit the yes button or whatever. The idea being that while someone may have stolen your username and password, they won't also have your phone. That's the plan.
And it's a one-time code, so it's not something the other end can lose to the bad guys, like your password currently
is. The other day,
is.
While I was typing in my password, my passkey to something, it changed.
Yeah, so this is like 60-second timeout.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So I caught it just at that time, you know, that it was changing. So,
yeah.
Okay, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
No security measure is perfect, and passkeys are only as secure as the integrity of the device ecosystem on which they're stored. They also take control of security away from users and run this centrally instead. But this is intended to simplify messy username and password security and the hodgepodge of two-factor authentication solutions, which still primarily means text messaging with all its inherent risks. Passkeys are phishing-resistant and secure by design. They inherently help reduce attacks from cyber criminals such as phishing, credential stuffing, and other remote attacks. With passkeys, there are no passwords to steal, and there are no sign-in data that can be used to perpetuate attacks. So without overthinking this, the advice for Microsoft users is to replace passwords with passkeys as soon as possible. This means when you sign on, instead of getting a text message, you'll go to the Microsoft Authenticator app on your phone and type in the code number you find there. Passkeys aren't perfect, but they are a 99.999% solution for all Microsoft users and will shut the door on those 7,000 password attacks per second that Microsoft blocks, plus all the others it does not.
And this is only Microsoft services. Those are the only ones they can stop, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So how many billions did it say?
Right.
Yeah, really.
Microsoft pushes, and our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft pushes pass keys for authentication. Your choices are, I already use a pass key. I should switch, I know. But pass keys are mildly inconvenient. Change hurts my brain. And pass what now? So far, we've got 27 votes in the poll. And pass what now is in, I knew it would be, in first place,
mm-hmm.
Followed by, but pass keys are mildly inconvenient. So We would love it if you would vote in the poll and not pick pass what now. And and after you've voted in the poll, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Microsoft, by the way, has a support page on how to sign in with a passkey. And I'm you did that.
I'll get it from I'm in your page, and I'm going to do it.
Okay. And Steve's going to put that online in just a minute. It's not terribly difficult. It's a few steps, but it's not bad.
You got to take the time to do it.
Right, and you do have to download the Microsoft Authenticator. There are multiple authenticators out there. There's one from Google. There's the one from Microsoft. There's one from Facebook. There are a number of others. And generally speaking, you can pick which one you want to use. And then just tell it that's the one I want to use. But sometimes the thing you have is not an available choice, so then you have to download a different one.
I have a customer who is specifically leaving Microsoft services because they require an authenticator.
Well, and I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, really.
And he can't run it on his computer. Huh? Because the authenticator apps only run on your phone.
That's exactly right. So if you're one of those people with a flip phone or only a landline, you're going to stop. Get Linux. You're going to need to go to Linux.
My main home computer is older and doesn't have any authentication ability to it. So when I log in someplace and it asks for my iPhone authentication, it's in the other room, darn it.
Yeah, well, that's
it's mildly inconvenient. I got to get up and go to the other room. Or I usually click try another way and put my password in.
Right.
Now, Google's starting to get, say you can't try another way because you already have passkey set up.
Right.
But the thing of it is, you can buy such cheap phones that, you can put some time on a phone card.
Yep.
And then you just use that for strictly for, signing up to different things that it can just do it for that. And then turn the phone off.
Well, you need a smartphone to be able to run an authenticator app. A lot of places now use text messaging as that second factor.
Mm-hmm.
Text messaging is not secure. Anyone can read a text message from the other end to you.
Yep. Right. So
they probably won't, but they could. A target.
Right. So if you're a target, they're monitoring your text messages. You get a text message with the code in it. By the time you get it, their robot has already put it in.
Yep.
Right? Their code has already grabbed it and put it in. So it's very similar with gift cards.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, and if you're getting those last-minute gift cards, if you get... Take a look at the gift card. If you can see both the gift card number and the code, do not get that gift code.
Yep. The key code.
Do not get that gift card because it's already been emptied.
We had Justin McCabe from Lifespan at the Saturday meeting.
Right.
And he was talking about that, and there was a new scam he had heard about, where people will go and they'll steal a bunch of the gift cards from a kiosk. They're not good, though.
Yeah.
They'll carefully open it up, cut the code number off, because you can't see the code number. You're not supposed to see the code number.
Right.
Seal it back up and put it back on the shelf at the store. So then when the next person buys that, it gets scanned and loaded at the register and activated. Their program... They've already got the PIN code, and they drained the money before you've even left the register.
Right. Because it's all automated. Once they get the card, there's no human involved anymore.
Right. And because of that, you almost can never get a refund on a gift card.
Right.
Because they have no idea you didn't use the money already. Well, I didn't. Well, it says you did, so there's nothing we can do about it.
Right. It's... So be very careful when you get things like that. If somebody offers a gift number where you can just get the number and, say to your child or whatever, go here and type in this number, that's somewhat more secure than a gift card.
But gift cards are for gifts. Mm-hmm. If someone is asking for payment in a gift card, they are scamming you. We had a sweet little old lady this week.
Wait, say that again.
Yes.
Louder and slower.
Gift cards are for gifts to people you know. If someone wants to get paid by a gift card, they are scamming you.
Yep.
There is no reputable company on the planet who takes gift cards as payment for anything.
Yep.
Yep. We had a sweet little lady this week that got one of those fake. Oh, this is a new one that's horrible. It's a real message from PayPal. Really does come from PayPal. The bad guy created an invoice using PayPal as their invoicing system because PayPal lets you do that.
Sure.
So it really came from PayPal. And they wanted $700. But there's a nice little line there that says, you think this is fraud? Call this phone number to be sure.
Only the phone number is fake.
The phone number is fake. So she called the phone number, let them into her computer. They had her open terminal and were showing her top. And look, all these things are people trying to break into your computer. So technically someone is trying to break into her computer right now.
Right. top, for those of you who don't know, is a list of all of the programs that are currently running on your system.
On a Unix-based system.
On
Windows, you'd go to the process viewer.
Right.
So there's one process that might say Edge, and there's 27 processes that you have no idea what it
means. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So they start asking you for gift cards in payment, and she'd heard about that, so she said no. And so then they said, all right, we'll send us cash. So while they still had her on the cell phone, in a total state of panic, they had her go to the bank and try to withdraw $5,000 in cash from the bank to send them.
Whoa.
The bank stopped. Are you sure? Is someone on the phone now asking for money? So the bank tellers have started to be trained about gift card scams. A lot of the shopping tellers are too. We had another woman who got scammed. They told her to get a couple $100 in gift cards, go back in line to a different register with a couple $100 more, and had her do that like 10 times at 5 different stores while they're on the phone, keeping you in a state of panic so you don't stop and think.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and shouldn't there be a red flag the minute they say go to a different register? Tell you to go to a different register?
Yeah.
There's something hinky going on there.
I would think their bank should be a little leery with all those, you know, if they're doing $100, $100, and then 10 minutes later, another $100, and then another 10 minutes, another $100.
Your credit card fraud should pop up.
Yeah,
too
that
many
should
repetitive.
Be.
I got one the other day on my PayPal. It said somebody wants a refund. I don't recognize the name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recognize the amount. So, no.
Yeah. So
I haven't heard anything in a week, so
yep.
I have to assume it was fake. So.
This one customer does buy a lot of things from PayPal, so I went back to a real PayPal receipt. It had her name, her address, the name of the company, what she bought, and the total. So that's a way to tell if this message that...
Whether it's true or not.
Right. It really is coming from PayPal, but a bad guy sent an invoice that just says you owe us $700.
Right.
No itemization, no what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
Until they change that and start adding the fake
Well, that's
line
the whole
items.
Trouble. They take advantage of the folks that really aren't into computers like us and a lot of our listeners, and they use the fear factor.
Yep.
You know, especially around the holidays and everything else. We've been telling folks for the past month, you know, that this is the prime time that they're going to be, you know, sending out phone calls and all this other stuff, you know, trying to scare people. And, if you want that package, you know, you got to do this and that. And it's like, yeah, no. Or, you know, you owe this much money. And it's like, huh? Did you even really order all that stuff?
Yeah.
Well, you're trying to be nice and tell them that they made a mistake. I didn't order that.
Someone else did. To be nice.
Mm-hmm.
I once had I used to enjoy winding these guys up. I had one guy one time, and I had him on the phone for like 15, 20
minutes.
I've heard
keep them on the phone as long as you can so they don't scam somebody else.
Had him on the phone like 15, 20 minutes. And he finally said, well, let's do it with your credit card. I said, I'm not allowed to have a credit card. What? They don't let us have a credit card here. Well, why don't you go to the bank? Oh, no, I'm not allowed to leave the facility.
Myself.
What? Said, yes. I'm locked up in here, and they don't let me out for anything. Click.
Yep.
The funny thing is, the call center could be at another jail.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
That is exactly right. So yeah, look, we've said this a million times. It's nice to be nice. But at this time of year, it's smart to be mean.
Mm-hmm.
So don't fall for this stuff. If somebody asks you for something, verify it independently. So right now, when you're not being scammed, get the phone number for your bank or the online information for your bank so you can log in there and bookmark it so that you can just click and say, I'm going to my bank. Here it is. And I know it's my bank.
It's the-
or if it's PayPal, when I got this thing that said, you know, we want a refund, I went and looked at PayPal. No refund notice.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Then it's probably not. Real.
We did find the report abuse at PayPal link, the real link, and it said, thank you, this has already been reported.
Yeah. So you want to do all of that ahead of time. All your banks, all the places that you do electronic transactions.
And don't wait to use the phone number in the back of your credit card. If someone steals your credit card, you don't have that phone number anymore.
Unless you wrote it down in your Google Keep.
And somewhere else,
Yep. So... be aware that this sort of stuff, particularly now, and particularly the closer we get to Christmas, you know, we got your order for a Christmas present and it's delayed. Do you want us to send it super express? That'll cost you $100.
Yep. It's the level of anonymity they have on the internet and the feeling of safety you have in your own home.
Well,
if someone showed up at your door and said, I need $100 for this package. That he doesn't have with him.
Right.
You'd slam the door in their face.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, the other thing, too, though, which I got to give the banks credit for, is a lot of the banks now offer you the service. If you can get in, like you said, go to your bookmark for your bank, and you got your credit card tied to it. They have now, most banks have the feature that you can turn that card off immediately.
Temporarily.
And then... check out what's going on, and if you're suspicious of anything, even if it's a few hours, you can turn it off just to make sure that, you know, something isn't hokey going on that, you know, like you had, you know, ordering fur coats down in Florida.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Or, you know, like I had, folks were ordering Jersey Mike's in Albany, and they go, you didn't go there? I go, I live here in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
Oop. So they yanked that one, but I'm getting alerted. I love it now when the bank added this field to where now every time something hits my card, I automatically get a text saying, oh, you're this, even a minuscule one, you know, or a payment comes through. It lets me know on my phone so I can keep track of it. I'm like you, paranoid. Every day I check my balance in the morning. Just to see what's going on, because...
I check it in the morning and at night.
Yep. My boss had her...
hold on. It takes 2 minutes to do that.
Yeah.
You bookmark those sites, and you look at them, and you're done. 2 minutes. It's all it takes.
Yep.
Is your financial stability worth 2 minutes to you? Do it. Sorry, go ahead.
My boss had her credit card stolen once and reported to the bank, and... they asked her to leave it open because they're working with the police. There was some big ring going on. And so she's watching the charges on, and she made real sure to get in writing. She's not going to be responsible for any of these charges.
Get in writing.
Watching them buy stuff, went to Saks Fifth Avenue and bought a bunch of stuff, went to, you know, a jewelry store, bought a bunch of stuff. When they bought a bunch of Dell computers from our Apple dealer card, that was really the bottom of the
story.
Yep, stop that right now.
Yeah, set the flames off in that head.
All right, before we get too much farther into our morning, I believe it's time for the Rumballs.
It's after 5 somewhere.
It's after 5 somewhere, and I'm having a Rumball. Steve?
Yes, thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
They're
first
dense.
Today. Dave makes
these Rumballs.
Dave,
take over the show.
Thank you, Dave.
We're going to be busy for a few minutes.
Oh, my. That's very good.
Thank you.
That is very good.
Thank you very much. Like I told you, you know, I can't eat much of this stuff right now.
I may not be driving after this.
And,
Wow.
But I enjoy baking. That's one of my things. And, yeah, matter of fact, I took some to today. I was over at your old place, RIT, for some ham radio testing. And I took a package of those, and a few of the folks know, well, they know that I do this show, and they go, are those the famous rum balls? I go, yeah, we got to try. I took a good-sized bag in.
Wowee!
Wow.
When I left.
Yeah, the wait a minute, and then the hit you is really not.
Holy moly and a half.
Well,
I think these are one a day rum balls.
Yeah.
Well, I got to give full credit to my wife, because this year I, you know, with working, I didn't have time to go to the liquor store. And she was out shopping. She says, well, you want me to stop and get some more rum for you? I said, please.
Give me a napkin.
And she goes, all right, well, how, you know, I says, go for whatever proof, you know, you can get. Because, you know, usually I'm getting 95 to 100 proof.
Yeah, you had a contact in Jamaica, right?
Yeah. He's under the weather, so I didn't get anything this the past couple of years. But she calls me. And she goes, I found this one. It's 150 proof. Is that good enough? I go, hell yeah, grab it.
Grab it.
So that's what went into these.
Wow.
And like I say, my secret, because folks say, well, what's your secret? I do up the dough, and then it goes in the refrigerator for at least a week.
Yep.
It's got to go in there and just ferment for like a good wine, age, and... Last night, we're sitting there rolling them. You could smell it. The minute I unwrapped the dough from the cellophane,
Steve and aroma. I better drive home carefully, even though it's 2 hours, yeah. An hour and a half from now.
Wasn't there a real famous brand of rum, 151 proof?
Could be.
That well, there's several.
That
I
was
mean,
in the name.
Back, the Antigua rum that my friend Elroy used to send me, yeah, that was 151 proof. And
Wikipedia says most rum is 20 to 30% alcohol. This 151 rum is 76% alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah, this is 75% alcohol because it's 200 proof is Everclear. It's pure alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 150 proof is 75% of the way there. So,
yeah. I figured these would work pretty good.
Holy moly and a half. Seriously, that's some good stuff. I won't be having another one of those for a while, but that was some good stuff.
Apparently, there's one that's 180 proof.
Probably.
Whoa.
That's some,
from Grenada.
Well, that's, God bless them, but that's 150 proof is fine.
Yeah.
Glad you approve.
That's exactly right. So I like it a lot.
What's the other 25%? Water?
Flavoring.
Flavoring, yeah.
Flavoring and stuff, yeah. Yeah, wow, that was good. Sorry, I'm just basking in the glow.
Well, like you say, you got to let it you have it, and then you just got to sort of let the taste buds enjoy the flavor going down.
Yep. Very tasty. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, maybe me, Nick Francesco, assuming I'm still conscious, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And now it's time for security news. I can grab the paper.
Insecurity news.
Mm-hmm. The Irish Data Protection Commission fined Meta, the parent company of Facebook, €251 million, which is $263 million American dollars, over general data protection regulation, or GDPR, violations arising from a 2018 personal data breach impacting 29 million Facebook accounts. The breach was caused by the exploitation of user access tokens by unauthorized parties. which, by the way, wouldn't have happened if they had been using authenticators. Exposing sensitive user data such as names, email addresses, phone numbers, and physical locations, while it also had an impact on children. Although Facebook took immediate corrective action upon discovering the bug in its View As feature, the incident still violated several GDPR articles. The Irish Data Protection Commission has promised to publish the entire decision soon, providing the public with more insight. On Wednesday, the United States Supreme Court confirmed it would review whether a federal law that could ban or force a sale of TikTok is unconstitutional. The announcement came just one day after TikTok and its owner ByteDance petitioned the Supreme Court for temporary injunction to halt the ban until the High Court could consider what TikTok claimed is a massive and unprecedented speech restriction ahead of a change in U.S. presidential administrations. But while the Supreme Court agreed to review the key question that remains for TikTok, whether the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary-Controlled Applications Act violates the First Amendment, the court declined to order the injunction that TikTok sought. Both TikTok and the Department of Justice must file briefs by December 27th, then have just 1 week to submit replies before oral arguments begin on January 10th. An ongoing phishing scam is abusing Google Calendar invites and Google Drawings pages to steal credentials while bypassing spam filters. The threat actors have targeted 300 brands with over 4,000 emails sent in 4 weeks. The attacks targeted a broad range of companies, including educational institutions, healthcare services, building companies, and banks. The attack started with the threat actors using Google Calendar to send meeting invites that look pretty innocuous, especially if you recognize some of the other guests. Embedded in these links is a link that leads to a Google Forms or Google Drawing that prompt the user to click another link, typically disguised as a reCAPTCHA or support button. Email researchers at Checkpoint said that by utilizing the Google Calendar services to initiate the phishing invites, they bypass spam filters as they are coming from a legitimate Google service. Google Calendar phishing is not new, with Google previously rolling out protections allowing users to block these types of invites more easily. However, if a Google Workspace administrator does not enable these protections, you will continue to have invites automatically added to your calendars. Checkpoint recommends that users be wary of all meeting invites received, and if they prompt you to click on a link, ignore them unless you trust or confirm the sender. How secure are you feeling? Give us a call if you dare. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. There's just a lot of that stuff out there, and mm-hmm. we all have to pay attention and be more careful. That's mm-hmm. just the way it works.
Due diligence.
That's exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Walter from Greece, New York. What's up, Walter?
Hello there, gentlemen, and happy holidays and holidays to you.
And also to you.
Thank you. 2 weeks ago, I called you because I had a problem of unmounting a USB device that would attach to my old hard drives, and it would not unmount, and I couldn't safely remove. And while I'm kind of to say apologize to you all for convincing you that it was a hardware issue with this adapter when it was really a software issue.
Aha!
Yes, MX uses XFCE desktop, and the file manager for that is Thunar.
Yep.
And apparently Thunar has had a history of developing a problem where it will not safely remove or even unmount devices. And it doesn't affect just MX Linux, but it's other distros that use the XFCE desktop, file manager. So what I did is that I took the consensus that I can see from all of these things is that I downloaded and installed Space FM, which is a file manager. But the funny part about it is that has been discontinued since, I believe, 2018. There's nothing going on, but it's still there in the repositories. MX says it's good to use. The managers of the distro have recommended that just go use Space FM, and it works perfectly, very
good.
Fast. So apparently, luckily, I did not go ahead and destroy the hard drives. They appear to be working just fine.
Excellent. Well, good for you.
Yeah. So, again, I apologize for kind of convincing you that it was a hardware issue with that USB adapter when it really wasn't.
It's interesting because I use Thunar as well on XFCE.
Yeah.
And I have never had that issue. Interesting.
Yeah, but if you do a web search, you can find it, especially with leading into the forums. Mm.
Yeah, no, I believe you. I just never had the issue, so I never went and looked to see.
Yeah, why would you?
Every now and then, I run into a flash drive that just refuses to exit. Something is using this file. Well, tell me what.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing I do helps, so just shut the computer down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's one thing that I found about Space FM, in that it will tell you. I had the problem. I tried on Thunar. Turn on Space FM, and then you can get a window, and you can see just exactly what that identification is of why it won't unmount. You can then make the appropriate commands, whatever, and it takes care of it. So it's a good one.
I don't know about this. Space FM comes from somebody called Ignorant Guru.
Yes. And, yeah. And, well, it's in the repository or the thing, the install software manager of XFCE, they're recommending it. From what I understand, it's a offshoot of PC Man FM, which is still viable, but it still doesn't have all the features that Space FM has. And people are kind of sad that it hasn't been picked up by somebody and continued. So.
Right.
So, but I do have one other comment, too. You were talking earlier about the pass, secondary authentication, and I like to have the telephone call. You were talking about text can be seen by people. Mm-hmm. I prefer to go with the phone call. Let them, they call me and give me the code, and I can put it in. So I think that's more secure, wouldn't it be?
Theoretically, yes.
You can't tap a phone without a warrant, legally.
Right. Yeah. Legally.
Yeah.
And that would be fine, but not everybody offers that.
Yeah.
In the olden days, 10 years ago, it was a lot more common to call your home phone. And what we have run into is that people who never changed their secondary authentication process. And so now that Google and Apple and Microsoft are asking for that phone number, they are assuming it's a cell phone and trying to text people's landlines so that they can't get a text. Or the phone you used to have 10 years ago when you started that account, which isn't valid anymore. So everyone, go into your accounts every now and then, Google, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, everybody basically, and verify your recovery information. Make sure you still have that same phone number available. Make sure you still have that same secondary email address available. And if you don't, update it. I've noticed that Apple is starting to ask that on my Apple devices, to make sure, verify your phone number every 6 months or so. It's not as common as it used to be to get a new phone number. Every time you changed cell phones or moved houses, your phone number used to change.
Right.
But these days, you can port your phone number with you to every new place, so that's not as common anymore. But a lot of people, abandon one email address and don't have that anymore. Or they created the account with a work email address and don't work there anymore. And so when that company tries to send a code to your email address you don't have, you can't. In fact, we're running into a customer right now. They're trying to change their DNS table for a new mail provider, and they can't find who's registered their DNS. We think we'd found it, but it doesn't say that anywhere.
Right. So you need to keep that stuff up to date, and so many people do not. Be aware of that and check in every once in a while with your services.
Yep. Or someone will have come in for an appointment to have problems with a password, and they're going to call the home phone number. The service does support phone calls. They're going to call the home number with the code.
Right.
Well, we're not at home.
Right.
But do you have an answering machine? Maybe you can check your answering machine remotely, and no one knows how to do that.
Right. All right. Thanks, Walter.
Hey, have a marvelous, wonderful, safe, and prosperous New Year.
And you too. Have fun.
Yep. Bye. We had one the other day where it was the granddaughter who helped set things up and doesn't live here anymore.
Oh, we see that all the time. I don't know. My son set that up. My daughter set that up. My grandchild.
It's the phone number ending in 74. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't know your phone numbers.
Yeah. Or that was three houses ago.
Right. I don't know. It's you need to keep this stuff up to date, and I know that's a pain in the neck, but it's a bigger pain in the neck when you're trying to get something and you can't.
Yep.
Because it was, you know, 10 years ago or whatever.
I hope more companies start doing the reminding you every now and then, is this information still valid? I've seen Yahoo do it, too.
And Google does it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. What's up, Tim?
I got a little problem. I use the Chromebox.
Okay.
And I have a friend who was helping me out with rides and such who uses Microsoft. Well, I opened up my Google Calendar, and I have all of her appointments on my Google Calendar.
Are you sure you're logged into your account and maybe she didn't log into hers?
I'm sure I am on my account.
Okay. Yeah, in the upper right-hand corner, you usually get your picture. It's your account that you're logged into.
What it sounds like is that she added herself to your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead.
Okay, I just was going, okay, sorry.
Okay, so one thing to try is to look over on the left-hand side and see if you, there should be a column on the left with a bunch of stuff. One is a list of all your available calendars, and you may see her calendar listed there.
Which you can check.
I see my name checked, birthdays, and family checked.
Okay.
So she added her events to his calendar?
That's just weird.
Yeah.
All right.
Is there an other calendars down below the my calendars? There may be a little plus sign
slider.
A circumflex. The little up arrow caret that you have to click to see other calendars.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where I can see my work calendars. Yeah. Is her name listed there?
Sure. No, it just says holidays in the United States,
okay.
Which are checked.
She had to have added.
Somehow she did. So what you might want to try, just for the heck of it, is uncheck. You said you had three. You had your calendar, family, and what else?
Birthdays.
Okay, uncheck the other two and see if it goes away. Then she's somehow added.
There we go.
Okay, so one of those two she added herself to.
Family.
So if you point to family, and at the right-hand side there's three dots.
Got it.
You can go into settings and remove that calendar. So.
Okay.
She may have intended to create a shared calendar between you, so you could share events between yourself, and then she accidentally gave you all her events.
Right.
So it's common for parents to have a kid's calendar.
Right.
So the kids can put stuff on the calendar.
Yeah, for families.
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably what happened.
There you go.
Thank you very much. Steve, oh. I haven't seen you since Astronomicon.
Oh, yeah. We just saw Wayne last night at Kevin's party.
Oh, cool.
Name droppers. All right. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
From the old science fiction days.
Yep. That is a nice feature of Google mm-hmm. calendars, that you can see someone else's calendar mm-hmm. and see what they do.
And that's how the calendar spam shows up, your story earlier.
Right.
Apple went through that a couple of years ago, too, with iCal.
Right. Well, yes. Google Calendar is not the only one that does that.
No.
But the fact that any of them can do it is a nice feature that often gets misused or misused both in the sense of, oops, we did something wrong, and ha-ha, we got you now.
Yeah.
So you got to be aware of those things. And I get it. You're not, you know, you've got a calendar. You don't look to see what other features it has. Until you need them.
We have customers who get confused because they have a Google Calendar and an Apple Calendar and a Microsoft Calendar and a Yahoo Calendar. They don't look at what calendar they put their events on. And so they're all scattered because they're different colors. Well, that's nice. It has different colors. Well, that means they're on different calendars.
Right.
And then suddenly they can't find a calendar because they didn't log into their Yahoo account anymore.
Right. Well, but they could add their Yahoo calendar.
Right.
To their, for example, Google calendar.
Yep. So we usually say standardize on one service and pick that. I didn't know I had four services.
You do.
Yeah, you do.
Pick one and don't go to the other three.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, happy winter solstice.
Happy, happy.
Yeah, today is the solstice, isn't it? What time? Let me see.
I think it was 4 a.m., something like that.
I'm kind of logging in here a little bit late in the show, but did you get the Rumbles this week?
Oh yes, we did. We have them right here.
Okay. When Dave answered the phone, he sounded a little funny, but
Dave always sounds a little funny.
He's
not even eating them.
I don't even eat them.
It's me and Steve. Yeah, it's me and Steve. And this year the rum is 151 proof. 150 proof. So we're not having a lot of them.
Yeah, no. Okay.
Well, hey, as long as you're not driving home, eat them up.
Exactly right. We need designated drivers. Everybody show up.
Yeah, I'm just getting over a sinus infection. That's probably why.
Yeah. Well,
change my voice a little deeper. Yeah.
I had a coworker years ago that said, you know, some warm rum would take care of all my ailments.
Well, at least you don't care anymore about them.
Right. When I was a kid, my father would give me hot lemonade to drink. And it was only years later that I discovered he spiked it with anise. Anisette. And, man, I tell you what, a couple of glasses of that at the age of 8, yep. I was ready to go to bed.
Yeah, I bet. Wow.
So, yeah.
So, one of the things that I was going to mention, I don't know a whole lot about the VPN thing, but I bought the Avast Premium Multi, whatever it doesn't, they don't cover anything Linux, but I have one Microsoft machine that I use for work stuff. Which, by the way, you didn't add the micro what?
Yeah, that's right. I didn't. That's right. Sorry.
That's the first one I look for. You start talking about that, I go, micro what?
You're right. I apologize.
The Avast package came with a VPN, and that thing is the most intrusive anything that I hate it. I actually Rebo uninstalled that feature.
Good.
Because I just kept getting tired of dealing with it.
Yeah, every time you install a program, it assumes you want to use it all the time, and if you're not, it nags at you to start using me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Here's the thing about VPNs. VPNs were originally designed so that you could work remotely from your company. Your company put up its own VPN. You log into that, and it's just like you're sitting at your desk.
Right.
That works great. That's what a VPN is for. Now, everybody runs a VPN to keep you secure. Well, if you've got an HTTPS connection to something, you're already secure between you and the other computer. If you go through the VPN, you may not be secure any longer.
Yeah. The only thing the VPN does is hide your location from the other end.
Right. And mostly you don't care, unless I suppose you're going to some bad sites. But mostly you don't care. What you want is a secure connection from you to the other end, and you've already got that with an HTTPS connection. Putting a VPN in the middle of that breaks it because it gets decrypted at the VPN, and now you don't know what they're doing with your information.
Especially the free VPNs, because they got to be making their money somewhere
exactly. And
by selling your data.
Exactly.
But a pay VPN can do the same thing.
So, yes, if what you want to do is watch BBC programs that don't come to America, you can use a VPN to pretend you're in England. But other than that, the only legitimate use for, and that's not really legitimate, I have to say. So the only legitimate use for a VPN is to log in to work using their right. proprietary VPN.
Right.
So I don't recommend VPNs. I don't use a VPN.
All the hype about their security is way overblown.
Yeah.
Well, when I bought the Avast package, it was like made no difference. I got it the VPN part essentially free.
Yeah, throws it in as part of all of our super features. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that part, I like the Avast. It works pretty well.
Yep.
Except I use a feature called App Lock on my phone.
Oh, yeah.
And it keeps shutting itself off, and I don't know why. I haven't gotten any answers why. I've been all morning on the phone with Avast customer service. Didn't come up with anything except they'll send me an email.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
One thing you might check is if your this is an Android phone?
Yes.
It may be set to automatically stop apps when the screen turns off.
Oh. Okay, yeah, I know that. Yeah. I know so, I don't have it set for auto sleep, but...
Right. And that's actually part of accessibility. So go into the permissions for Avast and for accessibility and grant that app permission again.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go that route because I keep turning it on and it keeps turning off.
Right.
Don't know why or when or what, but yeah. So one of the things that I was going to talk to you about today or just share with you that I kind of got a chuckle, in the local news with all the hype about the drones, it says local experts, and I'm going, what local experts are that, suggest the use of a VPN amid all the drone sightings.
What? What? I mean, how?
Experts suggest use of VPNs amid drone sightings.
Local experts. I believe they've misspelled idiots.
Yeah. So a VPN will protect you from the drone.
That's the most nuts thing I've ever seen.
Dum-dum-dum.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that these guys... Yeah, I don't think that's part of your...
Well, it's the other way around. If you are a drone pilot, you might want to use a VPN yourself. We had this big argument. I fly model airplanes, but the FAA considers any... remotely controlled unmanned vehicle to be a drone, including airplanes and helicopters. One of the things that I have to do when I'm flying in public is I have to have a transponder now on my plane, which costs way more than they said it was going to, which publishes its location to the internet, which means that someone could find me and steal my expensive airplane.
Right.
Right.
So some of the people are saying, use a VPN so they don't know where you are actually standing. But the idea was that a bad guy uses a drone to do something bad, and they call it like a license plate in the sky so that the police can find you. It's just like every new technology law that comes along, it's hurting the good guys, and it won't stop the bad guys.
Right, exactly. All right, Fred, we got to go.
Enjoy the run balls.
Thank you. Have fun. All right, that's it for the first hour, but don't go too far, because there's a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Take a little bio break, grab yourself a sandwich and a beverage, possibly by this point an adult beverage. Don't go outside unless you have to, but we will be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because it's your support that keeps us member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org.
More with Nick Francesco,
Dave Enright,
a public service of the Greece Central School
on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And here comes the Apple news.
But to finish the comment that we're doing off air, you can get some, they literally come from China. They're cheap handheld radios.
Well, they won't be cheap anymore.
Oh, yeah. No, Bofang, they're, you can pick up, and this is no lie, a Bofang, which you could talk, if you had your license and wanted to talk to the local repeaters, which you can do, you can get them as cheap as $23 a piece.
Right.
But and, you know, they don't
the
have much.
Start, it'll be...
It's all line of sight, you know, because right. You've got to be in sight of it. But you could turn the GPS feature on there for
the GPS
tracking.
Well, the problem
tracking.
Is it's not just GPS, it's also altitude and a couple of other things.
Yeah, that it doesn't do. It just gives you your GPS. So.
Right.
And there's a bunch of flight tracking software that's really cool to use just to watch airplanes. My son has a house in Gates near the airport. And so plane goes over, I can look up what it is. What's really amazing, and goes back to all the drones over Jersey, there's 3 major airports in that area. Most of those sightings are probably airplanes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There was one got reported that turned out to be Constellation Orion. And another one was Venus. But you can click on the planes, and it will tell you that this plane is at 38,000 feet. Well, that's what, 4 miles?
Yeah.
4 miles away, a giant thing is going to look tiny.
It's going to look tiny, but you can still see the light.
You can see the lights. That's what they're for, to let you see them.
Exactly.
If you can see the lights, it's not a spy.
And plus you have a number, like the space station that's constantly going around, and you can see that from...
But the space station is just a single dot.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the point I've been making to people for the last, week and a half? Why would a spy drone have lights on it?
Yep.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. What is it going to run into?
That's
it's
like a Mr. Bean spy.
Yeah.
Right. So, so clearly they're not spy drones.
Yep. So flying over Irondequoit right now is a Airbus 321 from Boston to Minneapolis.
Nice.
So if you look up, you'll probably
see clouds.
That.
You're going to see snow right now.
So you're going to see is snow and clouds.
Yeah.
You're going to see clouds, you're going to get snow in your eye.
That's right now.
All right. Here's our Apple news of the week. iPhone users have largely avoided the Apple Intelligence features released prior to iOS 18.2, a new survey suggests. A survey conducted by CellCell, S-E-L-C-E-L, a tech trade-in platform, has revealed that while nearly half of iPhone users, 47.6%, consider AI an important factor when purchasing a smartphone, 73% of those who have used Apple's AI offerings feel that the features add little to no value to their experience. This sentiment is not unique to Apple. The study also found that 87% of Samsung users expressed similar dissatisfaction with the AI tools available on Galaxy devices. This makes sense. For example, Apple's generative AI should be making headlines. Instead, it's making them up. Just days after its launch in the UK, Apple Intelligence blurted out a totally fabricated headline about Luigi Mangione, the 26-year-old man who's been arrested for the murder of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson earlier this month. The Apple AI feature incorrectly summarized the BBC's reporting to make it sound like the suspect had attempted suicide in an alert sent to iPhone users. Luigi Mangione shoots himself, reads the AI's bogus BBC notification.
Well, just mixed up who he shot.
Yeah, that's all. It's yet another high-profile example of AI incorrectly reporting current events, again raising serious questions about the technology's role as a mediator of information. Apple has released iOS 18.2, an important update that fixes a critical security bug in the Passwords app. Speaking of security, the vulnerability allowed the app to use unencrypted HTTP to download icons for password entries. Put in your password and you might see a little symbol of some sort next to it. That symbol was being downloaded without any encryption, potentially exposing users to malware attacks. While receiving the wrong icon for a website might seem like a minor issue, those files could contain malicious code that would be delivered directly to your phone. Apple's not perfect, but you can still love them. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
They added a new feature in Apple Mail called Categories, which is the priority inbox that Google has. So all the cries about Apple copying Google again.
Yeah.
But we've had so many calls from people who hate it. They don't want their inbox prioritized because they can't find the mail they're looking for. Well, okay, sure. One guy said he spent hours on the phone with Apple support who said you couldn't turn it off, which didn't strike me as
right.
Right. And so I hadn't updated 18.2 yet on my phone, so I did. I launched mail, and it says, hey, look at this new conversation view. Learn more how to turn it off.
Yeah.
Took me 10 seconds.
Yep. Yep. Mm. We see that a lot for some reason. There's a way to do it, and people don't know where that is, and including the experts who are supposed to know where it is.
So they haven't had enough learning, because 18.2 just came out like a couple of days ago. They haven't had enough training on it yet. The biggest problem that Apple's having, I think, with the Apple Intelligence, is it only works on the 15 Pro and later. So only current phones, the 15, not the 15, the 15 Pro, right. And then the 16 Pro. So only phones from this year, basically. My phone has the summarize text messages feature. Okay. But it doesn't get all the new cool, the Genmoji feature, and all the extra stuff you see on the TV commercials. Got to buy a new phone for that.
Right.
Which it says in the tiny fine print at the bottom that no one ever reads.
Right. But yes, that's the way it works. And you know, part of it is they're driving sales.
Yep.
That's simply true. And the other part of it is, of course, that you may need a more powerful processor to actually do those things.
Yeah, that's what they're saying it is. You need a better processor. There's a lot of critics are complaining that Apple is late to the AI game.
Very, actually.
And they had to for their shareholders, they had to say, no, wait, we got stuff too. And so they've been slowly rolling out AI since last fall. Because now we're into winter.
Right.
And it wasn't for something this morning.
We're
into the solstice.
Yeah. We're into winter today.
Yeah.
As we can see by looking outside, we have winter.
Definitely is here.
But also the days are getting longer.
Yep. As of today, we gain 2 minutes each day.
Yep. And yes, the days are not actually getting longer. There's still 24 hours in a day. I understand
daylight.
That. It's a colloquialism that everybody understands. And shut up.
Yeah, it's just the amount of daylight, folks. You know,
I read a story once where a couple were riding a motorcycle and they stopped in Norway to get dinner, and they were on their way to see the midnight sun and were confused when the clerk said, well, the sun's up all the time now. No, we're coming to see the special sun that's only up at midnight. No, it's the same sun. It's just
the sun.
It's just never sets because we're so far north.
Yeah,
we've driven all the way from Germany to see this midnight sun.
Well, there it is.
Yeah. There it is, yeah.
Enjoy it. Turn around, go back.
The little town in Alaska, when the sun set a couple of months ago, and it now the sun stays set for like
8 months
before it'll come up again. Yeah,
yeah, there's a, what is it? It's on the National Geographic, the Discovery Channel, rather, and it's about these people that live up in Alaska, different families in that. And there's one lady that runs an outpost. She's like, you know, way up there.
Yep.
And, yeah, she goes into the darkness, and she, you know, she says, yeah, this is my life for the next 3-4 months that you just don't see dark light at all.
Right.
In Utagagavik, Alaska.
The sun, I'm sure you pronounced that perfectly.
Yep. The sun set in November and won't rise again until January.
Yep.
Yeah. That's got to be. But she, they show time, so she's got to go out and still plow and do that other thing because it's an open post, and it's a refueling station up there that she maintains. But it's like, whoa, what a life.
But the Northern Lights are really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
They've even been good this year down here, south. Yeah. I mean, we've been able
to... As far south as us.
Yeah.
That's south for the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And right now, with the current solar cycle, this has been very unusual to get Northern Lights even down this far. But because of the climate change and everything else, that's what they're attributing it to.
And, of course, you have to have no cloud cover in order to see it. So Rochester isn't that lucky.
Not always.
Yeah. Well, so now we got to watch out because the Parker Solar Probe is diving into the sun.
Right.
It's going to dip into the chronosphere and reach about 3 million miles from the surface of the sun. We hope it doesn't make the sun mad and spit a giant flare at us.
Yes. Yes. It's so tiny compared to the sun that the sun will not notice it.
Yeah. And but it's traveling at 430,000 miles an hour.
Yep.
So it is now the fastest object to ever leave Earth. It beat New Horizons after its Pluto flyby.
Well, but much of that, of course, is gravity assisted.
Yeah.
One cool.
They didn't send it that fast.
Yep.
One woman that I follow is Tamitha Scove, and she's called the Space Weather Woman.
Yep.
And she does these reports on all these flares and bursts of energy and everything else that's coming at the Earth. And she kind of warns people because quite often you sit there and, well, why do I care? You know, the sun's that far away. Well, these bursts through these cycles are what's causing a lot of, GPS systems to go haywire.
Yep.
Or times when your cell phones will black out.
Or your TV and radio reception.
Yeah, they can black out because of these solar storms when they erupt. And if they skirt the Earth, which a lot of them do, that's one thing. But a lot of them can create these solar flares that come right at Rochester and other countries even farther north that can cause blackouts.
Most of the flares are bigger than Earth.
Yeah.
Many, many times bigger than
Earth. Many times, and so we will go through them.
Yep.
Sometimes they don't hit us directly, but while they're still going on, we travel through them.
Yeah, well, we could, like I say, it could cause major radio blackouts that it could destroy. If we really got hit by a major one head on, they're saying that a lot of radio communications and circuits and everything else that we rely on would be corrupted. They literally would fry them. And that's why some folks, they get these special bags that will protect.
Faraday bag.
Yeah, that from that possibly happening.
Yep. There's the Carrington event, right? 1859. Wait, I can look it up. Carrington event, 1859. It was so strong that it set fires in telegraph stations.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And that could happen again.
So, the Carrington event was rare, but not non-existent.
Well, it's showing its head more now.
And it lasted for a couple of days.
Yeah.
It's showing itself more now because of our reliance on the cell phones and everything else, that these flares are causing disruptions in your communication. So you could go to spots where, oh, normally you would get cell service, but if a storm is going on, it can interrupt it up to a couple of hours sometimes.
Isn't there a couple of stories back in the day when a Russian pilot defected with their MiG or something, and we were all shocked that it still used vacuum tubes?
Yeah.
How far behind are they? No, vacuum tubes are safe from EMPs.
Well, and that's just it. Think about a Carrington event that would happen today.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it set telegraph offices on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Think what it would do to your phone, your router, your computer, your television set.
All that stuff would get fried.
It would all get fried at the very least, if not catch fire.
Yeah because of the electronics and multi layers in some of these devices of components.
And the great Northeast blackout of 2003. I remember that we were out without power for days. Some people weeks. Because of a switch in Canada and all the cascaded down the line.
Right.
Look at the folks.
And imagine how much worse that would be if it were a Carrington event.
Yeah. This is the folks in North Carolina and around there from the hurricane still haven't got a lot of essential services back together yet.
Right. And that's a small area comparatively to half the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know? We all love the idea of the Northern Lights. But there's a danger there, and a significant one.
Yes, and Larry Niven has a story called Inconsistent Moon, where a guy goes out at night, and the full moon is especially, it's too bright. It's really, 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 really bright.
I remember that story.
And everyone is so excited about how bright and pretty it looks, except he knows the only reason why the moon is bright is because the sun is shining on it.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have been some massive flare, and on the day side of the Earth is dead.
Yeah.
Right.
And this solar firestorm is flying around the earth at 1,000 miles an hour, and we've only got till dawn till we're dead too.
Yep. So, yeah. And the Carrington event also, you know, did extensive damage to the electrical power grid, causing blackouts and, you know, widespread electrical disruption. So, we
got it lucky.
We assume our electronics are going to be available to us, but that's not necessarily the case. And so Steve is right. Vacuum tubes are less susceptible to that sort of thing. We may be reduced to tin cans on a string.
Stone knives and bear claws.
In the event of another Carrington event. It's not impossible to have happen. So
there was, wasn't just recently, there was a gamma ray burst detected that
Doc Bruce Banner, powered by gamma rays.
Yeah. And if it usually happens with two black holes colliding.
Yeah.
And if it hits us, we're all dead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have the magnetic sheath around the Earth.
Yeah, but it may not stop.
But it might
something, yeah.
Stop that, something. So the main reason we're alive is because of that magnetic sheath around the Earth.
Dr. Phil Plait has a book on all the ways the universe is trying to kill us.
So there's a lot to be aware of and a lot to be wary of. A lot of this stuff, there's nothing we can do. So we just need to be prepared for the aftermath. But in many cases, some of the stuff we talked about earlier, there's things we can do, like start the pass key instead of the password.
Mm-hmm.
You can't plan for every disaster. Excuse me, you can't mitigate every disaster.
Yeah, there's just
but
no
you
way.
Should mitigate the ones you can.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes us all the way back to pass keys. So if you don't have pass keys on your major systems, you really should. That would be a very good idea. You just he turned himself off. Got it. So at any rate, that's a thing to be aware of, you know, if you're not doing pass keys now. Mm-hmm. And that also, one of the things that I've got on my to-do list, and I've had it for weeks, is to add a recovery email address to my email. I've got it on all the important ones, but, you know, I've got like 15 email addresses. So there are a bunch of the secondary ones that I don't have a recovery thing. Some of them I run the actual mail server, so I don't really need a recovery for that one.
They're safe.
But there are a couple that I do. And so if you don't have a recovery password or a recovery system in place, you end up calling somebody like Steve and saying, I can't get at my Gmail. What do I do? Nothing now.
Yep.
But a week ago, you could have set up a recovery address.
And part of this is because of all of the leaks. There's been 14 billion leaked accounts that we know of. And it is very likely that your email address has been seen in a leaked account. And so the bad guys have the passwords for whatever service lost your password. So by moving to passkeys, it's something the other end doesn't have to keep secret. So it's a secret that they don't have to keep, because they're very, very bad at keeping your secrets.
They are very bad. I get every week or so, mm-hmm. I get a thing from LinkedIn that says some name that isn't me, we can help you get back on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been tempted to go into that person's LinkedIn.
Yep.
And find out who it really belongs to.
I've gotten a couple of them that say, I've been in your computer for a month now.
Yeah.
Your password is, and it's a password I used to use because it got leaked from somebody.
From somebody.
And I'd be watching your camera, you do dirty thing.
Yeah.
Send me 10 Bitcoin or I will send to wife.
Yep.
Awkward grammar. Awkward grammar is usually the way you can tell these fake scams.
Right.
But they're getting better because of AI.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys, and Merry Christmas to all of you.
And to you as well.
Thank you. By the way, I'm wearing aluminum foil on my head to protect me from the drones. So,
yep. Congratulations. That's the way to do it.
I do have a question. The other night I was looking at my hard drive, and it really does have a lot of stuff on it now. And I was wondering if you could recommend a program or something that I could kind of go in there and get rid of stuff without getting rid of something that I really want. Now, I do have a program, and I can't think of it off the top of my head right now. Well, because I've got the aluminum foil on.
Right.
But it shows how the disk is divided and what's where.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm a little afraid to go in and just start deleting things.
Yeah, that's the problem. I like a program called OmniDisk Sweeper, which will...
Wait, what operating system are you running?
Mac.
I have the latest version of the Mac OS,
okay.
Whatever that is right now.
Yeah, on the Mac I like OmniDisk Sweeper, and on Windows I like TreeSize. That will go through all your folders, calculate all your folder sizes, and sort them by capacity. So you can see what the biggest folder is. So I had a customer the other day that they had a log folder that was 300 gigs.
Wow.
Well, let's turn that log file off.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when it tells you you've got 300 gigs in your pictures folder, you have to decide what to delete. There are a lot of cleaning programs that will claim to tell you what you can delete. I don't trust any of them because how do they know what I don't want anymore?
Right.
There was one of them that would delete the foreign languages out of all your apps and just leave the English resources behind. A lot of apps would then break because they've been modified, and so their security token doesn't match anymore.
Right.
But running something like OmniDisk on the Mac or TreeSize on Windows, you can see where those big files are, and they might be log files. It might be an old email account you don't use anymore but never deleted the messages.
Right.
So that's a good place to start.
And anything in a temp directory.
Yep.
Exactly what is a log file?
The operating system can keep a log of everything that happens. One of the most common ones we see is the mail connection log. Which is often turned on for troubleshooting. Why am I not getting my mail? Turn the log on and see what the server is saying back and forth. And so it logs every message between the mail program and the mail server. And then when you figure out what's going on, you forget to turn that off. And so it keeps logging every time you get your mail. It generates a few dozen lines of messages. So every system does that. On the Mac, you can go into the console and see those systems, see the logs. It's probably console on Linux, too. What is it on Windows? Event Viewer.
Event Viewer.
So, and some programs can also create log files.
Yeah, like, almost every program will create its own log file, too.
Yeah, it keeps a record of, for like me, say, my ham radio stuff. Yeah. I use one particular program that every time I make a contact and it, you know, it receives it in that program, it then keeps it into its log so I can refer to it.
So that's a log you would want to keep, but you probably don't need to keep a connection log for your mail server.
Yeah, but I thin that even out. I'll go only keep the past maybe 3 months. Then otherwise, you know, I can go through there, like you say, and delete a lot of the stuff that's in that file. Because it is a text file.
All right. Well, I'm going to try OmniDisk Sweeper then and take a look at that. My disk isn't full, but I've just got a lot of files on there now, some of which I can simply go through and say, I just don't need that anymore.
Yeah,
I'm just amazed at how much stuff I pile up in a year's time.
Yeah. And let me suggest that rather than deleting it, you throw it on a thumb drive.
Just in case.
It's off your machine, but just in case.
Yeah. In settings, general storage, is Apple's...
Yeah.
Calculators tell you where your storage is, but it just does gross things, documents, photos. It doesn't help on the fine detail.
Right. I got you.
All right, we got to take a break. Thanks. Uh-huh. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just got a call from a friend of mine who is trying to get the music off his Vista, Windows Vista laptop. He can get the cursor to move in safe mode, but it won't move if he boots up. Short of pulling the hard drive, which was all I could come up with, do you have... Any ideas how he can get the cursor to work and pull the music off his...
No. Vista is so out of date, there aren't even any tools online anymore.
Well, does the computer work in safe mode?
Yes.
Well, then do it there. Put in a stick, stick in a flash drive and copy the music folder?
Well, that should work, but... If that doesn't work, the only choice is to pull the hard drive.
And it depends on why the cursor's not working. Is there something broken?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. What's
infected.
Yeah, what's broken in the normal boot that it doesn't let it work.
Okay, I know I can do it in safe mode. Hopefully I can tell him how to do it.
Right.
Depends if safe mode loads USB drivers.
Right. It may be that safe mode is not able to load USB drivers, in which case the only choice will be to pull the drive.
Okay. Well, you've ruined his day, but thank you for the information.
Thank you. That's our job here. Thank you very much. That deserves a rumble.
Yeah. If only people wouldn't wait so long.
Yes.
To get their stuff. Well, I need this music off this iPod that broke.
Yeah,
iPod that's been discontinued for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I've got a 60 gig iPod, the original, you know, way back when, 60 gig spinning hard drive iPod.
That was later. The first one was 5 gigs.
You're right. It wasn't the very first one, but it was pretty close.
Yep.
And I haven't looked at that thing, and I can't tell you how long.
Every now and then
my musical taste will probably change.
Every now and then it comes up on a podcast I'm listening to. You should go get that old iPod out and see what your music tastes were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Oh, selling point of my first computer was it had a hard drive of 20 meg.
Yep.
We used to install... I cannot tell you how much business we had when we started installing 5 gig
Hard cards.
Hard drives in IBM computers.
Yeah, the hard cards.
The hard cards. And then they went to 10 gigs.
Yeah.
Megs.
And people, megs. You're, yep. You're right. I got Enright disease.
Thank you.
Five megs and then 10 megs. And the people who bought the 5 megs came in to say, give me the 10 meg.
Mm-hmm.
We need that extra storage. And my thought was 10 megs? The hell are you doing with all that space?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Now it's terabyte? Is that going to be enough?
Now I look at my terabyte drive and think, oh my God, it's 3/4 full.
Yep.
Gig is next, guys.
Yeah, right.
Well, we're starting to get into petabyte drives. 1,000 terabytes is a petabyte.
Right.
Yep.
And we don't want to go beyond that for a while.
Currently, it's a little cheaper to just buy multiple terabyte drives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Good luck.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, the minute you say something like Vista, the possibilities narrow considerably.
Narrow? They're just about door shut, locked, and nailed closed.
I had somebody text me this week about an XP computer.
Whoa.
And I had to tell her, there isn't anything you can do at this point. There just isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can
pull a drive out, put it in a new machine, and install.
Well, yes. You can take the drive out and get the data off it, probably.
Yeah.
But in terms of fixing the machine itself, no. You can put Linux on it, and yep. it'll run faster than XP, but still slow.
Yeah.
But that doesn't save your data. It doesn't do any of that stuff. So.
We had a gentleman come in this week and buy a 2015 model Mac because he had a vinyl cutter that he needed to run in his business.
Mm-hmm.
And it only ran on that version.
Right. So we've had several customers like this. So what would it cost you to get a modern computer? Well, that would be about $300,000 for a new vinyl cutter.
Right.
Okay. $500 for an old Mac. And when it dies... $500 for
another old Mac.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know. I get that. Absolutely get that. That's why, well, we had somebody call about Space FM, which was essentially dead since 2018.
Yeah.
But it still runs, and it's still useful, and they need it.
Bottom line.
Interestingly, Space.FM is a pretty neat astronomy page.
Yeah, it is. It's a very nice one. But Space FM is a file manager in Linux, and so... I use Thunar myself, and I've not had a problem removing external drives. It's interesting. Oh well, let me read
Should I keep the 2021 2 and 3 soundbites files on this computer?
They're already up on the archive, so you don't really need them.
Yeah,
and every once in a while I make a backup. It's only 20 gigs,
and it's in my backup. Yeah, although if I delete it from my computer now, I have no backup.
That's right.
There's only one copy.
One copy.
Yep.
That's right. But you have two copies. There's a copy up online in that
one. Yep. These are the raw files.
Right. Hackers leveraged... this is the Microsoft news of the week, by the way. Hackers leveraged Microsoft Teams to manipulate a victim into granting remote access to their system. The attack highlights the growing sophistication of social engineering tactics used by cyber criminals. The attack began with a flood of phishing emails targeting the victim. Shortly after, the attacker initiated a Microsoft Teams call, posing as an employer of a trusted client. During the call, the attacker instructed the victim to download a remote support application, initially proposing Microsoft Remote Support. When installation for the Microsoft Store failed, the attacker pivoted to AnyDesk, a legitimate remote desktop tool often exploited by cyber criminals. Once AnyDesk was installed, the attacker gained control over the victim's machine. The U.S. government Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, has warned U.S. federal agencies to secure their systems against ongoing attacks targeting a high-severity Windows kernel vulnerability. An attacker who successfully exploited this vulnerability could gain system privileges. Microsoft patched it back in June, which just shows how far behind the government is. Maybe even farther behind than you. Microsoft is investigating a known issue triggering product deactivated errors for customers using Microsoft 365 Office apps. According to online user reports on Reddit and Microsoft's own community website, affected users randomly received these product deactivated errors in Office apps, prompting confusion and disruptions. As Redmond explained in a support document published on Thursday, these problems stem from licensing changes initiated by administrators. So somebody somewhere fumble-fingered something, and you lose. It's definitely time for some good news about Windows 11 24H2, finally, isn't it? No, it isn't. No. Instead, we've got further tales of woe about fresh bugs in the 24H2 update. The first glitch is with the auto HDR feature, and when it's switched on, those running 24H2 may find colors and games are messed up. On top of that, some games may also crash with auto HDR enabled, so this is a bit of a double whammy of a bug. The other issue with 24H2 is audio related, and it affects PCs which have DIRAC audio. DIRAC audio is an app that aims to improve audio clarity, but in this case completely breaks the audio on a PC. With the 24H2 update, you won't get any sound at all. As a result, a compatibility block has been put on devices with DIRAC audio installed to prevent those PCs from downloading 24H2. The same is true of systems that have auto HDR enabled. So, would you prefer your Windows machine to be silent? Speak up and give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We've said it before, we'll be saying it again, but I'll say it right now. Windows support, Windows updates, Windows programmers, there are so many of them in so many different areas, and they apparently don't talk to each other because we've seen inconsistencies in UIs, inconsistencies in updates.
For ages.
And things like this happening. One update breaks another product. I get it. No one person understands anything more complex than a lever. And Microsoft Windows is very complex. I get that. But there are multi-terabyte products being delivered every day that work better than Windows. And it's all about project management, and their project managers are not doing a good job. That most likely is systemic from the top, because what seems to break most often is inter-project things. So like in this particular case, updating one thing breaks audio, updating something else breaks video, and it's because those two product lines don't talk to each other. Those two projects internally don't talk to each other. And again, I absolutely get it. Microsoft Windows is a massive, massive program.
228,000 people.
Yes.
In full-time positions. I mean, how many lines of code does Windows have, do you guess?
Well, I know I don't know, but
millions.
You know, take a look at the Mac OS, and mm-hmm. it has fewer of these problems. And take a look at Linux. It has fewer of these problems. So there's a way to do this, and we're not seeing it being done.
It's not like they don't have enough money.
Well, they can afford a manager, a software development manager who oversees this stuff.
But as we have said before, it's not the managers, it's the shareholders. So they have to constantly keep creating product, which then they can tout to the stockholders that they're going to have things on track to produce them more revenue.
Right. And the every shareholders quarter. Are... Go ahead, what?
Every quarter.
Yes.
Yep. No one takes long-term plans anymore.
Well, that's too long.
Right. What did you do for me in the last 3 months?
Yeah. Did you hear about Gronk?
No.
No. Not a sports guy. Neither am I, but I heard this on a Apple podcast. There's a football player named Gronkowski.
Sure.
So his nickname is Gronk.
Sure.
He apparently said on some interview that, 10 years ago, 2014, someone, a contractor, was building something for him at his football mansion.
Yeah.
Because he's a really good player, and kept going on and on about Apple stock and Apple stock and Apple stock, and so I don't know anything about stock, so I called my financial advisor and told him to invest $50,000. Over 10 years, that's gone up 200-300%.
Yes, 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 it would. Yes, it would.
So long term, your stock is probably going to go up until unless the company dies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so yeah,
it's like Forrest Gump. When I bought some fruit company.
So yeah, the fruit company.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, you've got, I don't know what to say about that. I just don't know what to say about that anymore. So, and stocks are still going to go up, and that's true. But the reality is that shareholders run the company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What the company does is strictly for the shareholders. It is to increase their monetary takeaway from that company. You don't matter. You are the product. And they don't care about you. I'm sorry. That's just fact. And that's true of any publicly traded company. It's true of Apple. It's true of Microsoft. It's true of Google. It's true of all of them.
Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that if you don't make the end users happy, then the stockholders are going to be mad because your stock's going to go down because people are going to stop buying your stuff.
Right, right. One of the things that we've heard from Apple, from Microsoft, is how do we stop people from going to Linux? Well, you put out a better product.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. But that costs money, and that lowers the profit, and that's a problem. You know, so, and I get it. You know, if your aim is to improve the lot of the shareholder, then there are ways to do that. But some of them are not good for the consumer. And that's simply a fact of life. But generally speaking, you know, that's one of the reasons. Look, Windows XP did everything everybody, not Windows XP, 95 did things that everybody wanted. You know, it was a great operating system.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to move on because Microsoft doesn't make money if you don't buy the new OS.
Well, it's just like Windows 7. How long did that hang on? And they had to keep extending it and extending it.
Because people didn't need anything more.
Yeah, it was doing everything. It was rock solid. It was one of the few operating systems that came out that didn't have to have a ton of patches. Yeah. Service Pack 1 or Service Pack 2, none of that stuff.
Right.
It just came out, and it was solid.
And it kept on working every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you'd have bought Microsoft stock when it was formed, today, the stock has risen 433,000%.
Yep.
So for every $1 you invested back then, you'd have $400,000 today.
Yes.
But everyone panicked and sold.
Yep. No, and that's one of the many reasons I went to Linux. Linux is run by people who aren't making money, quite honestly. They make money, but they do it through support and service. So Canonical, for example, who owns Ubuntu, you can buy a service contract with them where they will update and maintain and all of that stuff, and you call them with questions and et cetera, and that costs money. And many businesses, many organizations do that because they're mostly running Ubuntu in the back end, and so they're paying for support. But what Canonical says is, because we have that happening, I can afford to let you use it for free. So I use Ubuntu on all my devices, and I don't pay a penny.
Mm-hmm.
And when I upgrade, it costs me nothing. And when I load a new program, it costs me nothing. When I want to put it on a second machine, it's free. I can do that. I can duplicate one machine on another if I want to. I can do any of those things, and it costs me nothing.
One thing I will say, though, even with Linux, you know, there are programs out there and program writers. And if you're using a particular program, say it's a photograph program or whatever, and you're finding it useful, just like on the PC or the Mac, that developer, you know, sometimes if you just throw them a few pennies, again, you know, they're the same boat as the PC and the Mac people, you know, to keep good programs coming out, updates and everything else. They also need your support.
Yep. And yes, and I send money to a lot of places.
Yeah, same here.
Jimmy, what's his name from Wikipedia? I send him a few bucks every time he sends me an email. He's probably got me on a list that says sucker. Send him lots.
Yeah, but no.
And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
It's
and
just
I pay for a bunch of other programs as well. Programs that I use every day that I think are useful.
Yep.
I'm willing to throw a few bucks at someone. And sometimes it's a few bucks. Sometimes it's significantly more than a few bucks.
And they're so grateful for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're pounding away because especially with Linux, it's the love of the product, you know, and what they're accomplishing, you know, and making Linux that much better and prouder that, you know, they've got such a rock solid system and to, you know, support those folks that are keeping it that way. It's just paying it forward. You know, because that way you're going to keep getting more improved products that you're using on Linux. It'll make it even that much better.
Right. I have to say this one more time. Jim Button, Jim Knopf, called himself Jim Button, put out one of the very earliest, if not the earliest, shareware program. And it was called PC File.
Oh,
it was a flat database file.
Oh, yeah. That's old.
That's ancient.
Yeah.
That was, I don't even know when it came out, but it was a long time ago. Early 80s, maybe? Anyway, I sent him money.
82.
There you go. I sent him money. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back to me and said, thank you so much. I've never gotten money before for this.
Oh,
it
wow.
looks like shareware may be viable.
Cool.
So I may well be the first person who ever paid for shareware.
He wrote it for his church congregation.
Yeah.
While he was an IBM employee. Interestingly, IBM didn't claim ownership.
Right.
Mm.
Oh, here we are. And he did PC Talk as well. PC Write, the word processor.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, so that was him. Anyway, you know, I've been paying for shareware since 1982. And I got to say that I've been happy to do so. When somebody else puts time and effort in, just like we do at this station.
Mm-hmm.
So you can always go to jazz901.org and hit that big red donate button.
Yeah.
But when someone puts time and effort, you're welcome, Rob, into putting out a product that I appreciate, I am not hesitant to pay for it.
Yeah, because they've taken the time, and it's made my life a little bit easier, if I'm using it. Evidently, it must be.
Right.
And to keep future updates coming.
Jerry Purnell wrote an article about this new thing that's becoming an increasingly popular variant of free software. In 1993, in Soft Talk magazine column, it has no name, but it works like this. If you like my program, send me some money. Before it had a name called Shareware.
Shareware, yeah. Yeah, but Jim Knopf, nicknamed Jim Button,
is German for button.
German for button, is one of the very first. And you're right, he was an IBM employee. PC File. I loved that program. I loved PC Talk.
I remember PC Write. I used that quite a bit.
Yeah. PC Talk was actually from Andrew Flugelman. So it was PC Talk, PC File, and PC Write, because they wrote them they wrote them together, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty amazing stuff.
There was a local shareware company, Ambrosia Software.
Yeah.
And their company had a parrot as a mascot, Hector. And if you didn't pay the shareware fees soon enough, and it was like a long time, Hector would come in and either wipe out your game or he had a really nice space battle game. So Captain Hector would come in his spaceship and blow you to bits.
Yeah.
Cool. Pay your shareware fee.
Yeah.
Are they still around?
No, unfortunately. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page to see where they led to.
Oh, 2019 they stopped. Yeah.
But he had a company and offices and employees that was all being funded by shareware.
Yeah, I remember going to the place to talk to him about some stuff, and they had a whole second floor, a whole room full of people just playing games, and I thought, there's a job.
Yeah, well, network games, we used to do that. Apple Cider Users Group, we used to do our newsletter folding. We had to fold and mail the newsletters out.
Yeah.
And one month, Andrew brought out his triple box, and the post office rejected our mailing.
I don't doubt that.
Because the labels were too crooked. And that's when we found out that they could be a little bit crooked, but not too crooked.
You're right.
So I was a newsletter publisher at the time. So I put a line on that page that became the mailing page so we could line
people
up the labels.
People could line it up.
Just in case. So we had to go through and relabel hundreds and hundreds of newsletters.
Right. But yeah, it's I remember they made some great stuff. They had something that Apple actually included.
It was bundled. Was it Maelstrom? Maelstrom was one of their big...
I thought it was a utility.
They did a Centipede clone. But Apple bundled it with the Mac for a while. And Andrew said that was one of the worst things that ever happened to them. Because they got so many tech support calls.
Oh, right. For a product they weren't getting any money from.
That, well, far outweighed whatever Apple paid them to bundle it.
Right.
So I should have asked for more money.
Yep.
Is it Escape Velocity? I remember that, but one of them. But he wrote, he had some really good company programmers and made some really, really good games.
I remember he had really fine people working for him.
Yep.
And it's too bad that they're done.
Deimos Rising, was that it? I'm going to have to go back and find a old Mac now to see where that came from.
Yeah, right. I thought it was a utility, but it might have been a game. Productivity software utility, something.
Snaps.
Snaps.
Screenshot utility.
Yeah. There we go. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. We're going to take our rum balls and head on home and not drive anymore today. All right, I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions today. Good stuff all the way around. Listen, it's the end of the year, and there are many holidays being celebrated right now. Whatever you celebrate and however you celebrate it, I hope it's the best celebration you've ever had. And we're going to go home and celebrate with our families, but we will be back. Will we be back next Saturday? Why not? We'll be back next Saturday with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. So we will see you in just 166 sunnier hours.